everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, we're going to talk about signs of amateurism. So this topic was inspired when I was watching a particular USL game. I mean, it happens all the time, but this particular USL game, I was face-palming every 2, 3, 5 minutes because players were eliciting signs of gross amateurism. So much so that I wrote these 5 or 6 sort of things down. I shipped it off to Benny. Benny decided, okay, let's make an episode out of this. And that's what today is about. Interestingly, I think this is of great value to the broader audience out there, in my opinion, because many a times you will see a media member, a reporter, a fan saying player X, Y, or Z is top class or really good. And I'm watching these players, and it's clear that they have myriad signs of amateurism in there. So that is one of the great disconnects between a practitioner's view of the game and a non-practitioner's view of the game. Or maybe I should take it another level higher, a top-class practitioner's view of the game and everybody else. Now, that might sound very arrogant or very cocky. I hope you can forgive me. I know that you know that I have an Argentine heritage. We're notoriously known for these sorts of opinions, but I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to roll with it. So when folks say, oh, Jordan Morris is amazing, you know, back when he first started, or, oh, look, such and such a player is world class, et cetera, I'm like, guys, do you not see these grave signs, obvious signs of amateurism in their touch, in their decision-making, in their, you name it. And for youth coaches out there, youth parents out there, this is very important for you to be able to identify watching a professional game. Are all these errors made at the youth level? Of course they are. Of course they are. And many, many more. But that's not the point. The point is watching a pro game, seeing this in professional players, and then recognizing, oh, wow, if a pro player is messing this thing up, then of course the youth player is messing this thing up. Even if you don't see it in your own kid, in your own team, in your own players, it's because the context is different. That's all. It's much easier at the youth level. You don't get as exposed. But there are remedies for this. There are ways to better prepare you for the next higher levels. And that brings me to what sponsors this episode. Coaches, if you go to 343coaching.com, you can get free and premium programs for you there. If you train your teams and your players with the methodology that has been proven out over decades and is there for you to actually learn from and execute, well, the probability of showing these signs of amateurism at the next levels for your players aren't going to be there. And the probability of showing these signs of amateurism in your own youth teams is going to be greatly minimized, making you a more successful coach, more successful team, and your players will be identified in a much better light. Parents, I think it goes without saying, you need this level of discernment as well, and you need to be able to teach it to your kids. So for you, you go to 343masterclass.com. At least there, you can have your kid get started right away on the technical side of these big issues. And last but certainly not least, if you are coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you can go to 7v7coaching.com. We're currently running an amazing promotion for you. So as soon as you get on the email list, that promotion will be available. You can get started right away. Okay, everybody, I hope you enjoyed this episode with Benny Rogers, myself, on signs of player amateurism. Here we go. Are you doing okay?
Yeah, dude, everything good. There's so much to talk about, so much going on. Our last couple of Instagram reels, it's so funny watching people like debate in the comments, dude. It seems like there's like a 50-50 split, like people who absolutely agree with you and think that the U.S. system is shocking. And then it seems that there's another 50% of ignorant, brainwashed, soft-ass people, dude. It's funny, man. I don't know if you've been through the comments or not, but you're going to have to check them out. Maybe at the end of the episode, I'll read like 2 or 3 of them.
Okay. Yeah, I have not gone through the comments at all. I mean, I know what it's like. I've been on X since 2009. You know, we launched our first YouTube video in 2012, and you saw videos even of the famous video of the 10, 11-year-olds playing amazing soccer. There were haters in the comments like crazy saying, oh, kids shouldn't be playing on big fields. This is a disgrace. You're hurting development, or oh, there's a lot of yelling on the sidelines, is a disgrace, or oh, like, yeah, they're good now, but wait till they turn 14, they'll be shocking, you know, because like it just goes on and on. But Benny, to what you just said, there's an asymmetry in the comments, because everybody says, oh, well, Benny, you call me brainwashed and ignorant or whatever. Well, you're brainwashed and you're ignorant, you know, but I look at the asymmetries, because the truths, in my opinion, lie in the asymmetries. Let me give you an example relating to that. I was one of those people way back when. You probably were one of those people way back when. And the folks who kind of agree with our point of view, many of them, if not most of them, were also one of those people way back when, you know, when you first started and you're a noob and you don't know who the good sources of information are and you are indoctrinated basically by the establishment. And then over the course of time, you start opening your eyes to what's happening. You see how the sausage is made, and you jump the fence to what is now considered our side, the 343 side. So we know their stuff. We know their arguments inside and out. We've been there. We were them, Benny, but they've never been us. You see what I'm saying? So yeah. They don't actually understand this point of view.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean, you're right, Gary. Until I started absorbing all of this information with you and Brian, like, yeah, dude, I was one of the ones that would go to MLS games and think this is the top football in the world, dude.
Or not necessarily that, because they don't believe that, but you think it's awesome. You think soccer's on the right track. You think they're doing the right thing. They're trying to grow the game. You think all those, I can't find another word for it, all that ignorant sort of stuff, you think.
Yeah, for sure. No, I can remember myself saying, like, the future of U.S. soccer is bright, like, many times when I was a kid, dude. And that's a common phrase that you hear from the mainstream media, like, oh, the future is bright. This is a golden generation. We're on the right track. But as you start to open your eyes to a lot of things, you see that's not the case. But I think, dude, I think we're making small, like, I mean, I'm talking about me and you and all the work that we're doing. I think we're making small waves in the community, and people are starting to realize, but it takes more than just me and you. You know, it's everybody has to be fighting and pushing for change. Same thing with anything in the world. I mean, if you want to make a difference, you got to make your voice heard.
100%. And don't let anybody tell you that, oh, yelling online doesn't matter. It absolutely does matter. Yelling and sharing your ideas and expressing yourself online absolutely does matter. It's the establishment that tells you it doesn't matter, because they want you to shut the fuck up because they know it matters.
Yeah, exactly. And think about the time that we're living in, Gary. I mean, if you rewind the clock, you know, 50 years, me and you aren't reaching the same amount of people. If you want to make change 50 years ago, you had to, I don't know, take to the streets and gather a bunch of people and, you know, fucking protest. Now anybody can get their message out there, you know, so.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And obviously the establishment and the traditional legacy media hates it, because they want to be the only ones with a microphone. They want to be the only ones who share their opinions. They want to be the only ones having their ideas become the dominant ones. Clearly. Yeah,
for sure. Well, Gary, we'll touch more on those comments later. But earlier this week, you had sent me a list. And you said you wanted to build a list of personal observations of indicators that a soccer player is amateur. And you sent me about 6 or 7 of them. I kind of wanted to pick your brain as to, you know, why you created this list in the first place. And when you mention indicators that a soccer player is amateur, are you speaking about like professional players that can still be considered as amateur? Or can you even relate it to youth players that maybe they think they're high level, they're on the top ECNL team or MLS Next team, and you know, you can still tell that they're amateur.
Yeah. So it applies to everything universally, obviously. But the list that I was constructing was more aimed and inspired by watching professional games, you know, the past week.
Okay.
And And I think it's a good instrument or a lens through which people can identify low-level professional players. Now, this list obviously then applies to youth as well, because if the pros are messing up, then all the youth are messing this stuff up and they need to polish it up. The asymmetry in this one lies that at the youth level, there's the laundry list is way longer than what I popped up here. So yeah, it was inspired by watching some pro games recently. And look, it's not like this list popped into my head this past week. These themes have been with me for 20 years. It's the same themes. 20 years I've been watching games, and for 20 years, this list has been in my head. It's just maybe time to share it.
Yeah, yeah. And or what league were you watching when you're like, you know what, I need to put together this list?
No, I was watching USL. And okay. So before everybody says, oh, Gary, USL, of course. Guys, please. This exists at the highest of levels too. This exists, like, I'm talking La Liga or the Premier League or top five leagues. These sorts of things exist. And it really is a key differentiator between the truly elite and the second, third, fourth, fifth tier citizens, no matter where you are playing in the world. Obviously, you'll see these things more in USL. You see it happen more. But yeah, please don't think that it only applies there. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, should I read off the whole list or should we go through them one by one?
Yeah, go one by one, dude, I think.
Okay, sounds good. First one is pretty easy to spot. And again, you even see this at the highest of levels sometimes too for the shocking players. Ball pops up on first touch.
Yeah, man. It's absolutely, look, the five that we're going to, I presume you're going to go through the five, right? The five that we're going to go through today, you have to understand the visceral reaction that I have when I see this, and I am invested in a club or a team or a particular match. You're invested in it, emotionally invested in it, or economically even. And so when you see these things happen, I'll speak for myself. I want to kill myself. I'm like, how the fuck are you that shockingly bad? Okay, so the first one, ball pops up upon your first touch. So we've all seen it, but now you need to really tune your eye onto it. You're getting a pass. It's probably a good pass, or at least a decent pass. It's on the ground. It's at a very manageable pace for you to be able to control it and have your first touch do exactly what you want it to do. And when you receive it, it ricochets off your foot or your shin or who knows what, or your laces, and it pops up. It could pop up 1 foot into the air, 3 feet in the air. It might even pop up all the way to your head, you know, at times. So when that happens to you, the whole play is ruined. Everything's ruined because you just lost 3 seconds, and the entire defense has now shifted and reset, and they're compact all over again. I'm thinking about attacking, obviously, but this is important on defensive side of the ball as well. And it just shows extreme levels of amateurism. You are not a good player. Period. End of story. You will never see that happening to the best in the world. It doesn't happen, Benny. And if it does happen, maybe it'll happen once every, I don't know, 10 games, maybe once out of their 500 touches. Maybe it happens marginally. But with these players in particular, like in USL, it's like 50-50. Oh, he's getting a pass right now. Let's see if he can actually control it, if it's going to pop up on him. Infuriating, Ben.
Yeah. And Gary, you can see how this can happen at the youth level, even for quote-unquote elite players. I mean, they're still young. They haven't gotten the tens of thousands or millions of repetitions that you would get by the time you become a professional. So at the youth level, I can kind of understand how this can happen, but dude, I mean, even if you're in USL, man, like, how are you still having a first touch that pops out of the air, bro?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do that they've just had poor training growing up. Those players have not been doing the rondos day in and day out for years and years and years with increasing levels of difficulty, where the pace of the ball in the rondo goes higher and higher and higher. So, because if they had been doing this, the probability of the ball popping up on them and they don't control it upon their first touch goes down, 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 down. I think that's what it comes down to, because our guys, Ben, the guys who turned pro, however many, I don't even keep track of the 10 guys from that famous team that turned pro and are playing professionally or have played professionally, it doesn't happen to them. They control it, Ben.
Yeah. Do you think it could also be, Gary, a case of, like, let's say a pro player, obviously when they're trying to become pro, you know, they're working their ass off every single day. Maybe they're on the wall every single day. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I've made it pro. You know, now I'm only going to show up to team training. Now I'm only going to do like fitness type stuff. And so now they're neglecting their first touch, because Gary, I mean, you know this better than anybody. You have to keep working on your touch consistently. Like, the training never ends. And so I think a lot of times a player can be successful early in his pro career, but then they start getting complacent and start thinking like, you know, I'm good. I'm here in the pro team already. I'm just going to show up to team training and, you know, I'm the best already. So, you know, why the fuck am I going to go on the wall? Marty on LAFC, dude.
It happens all the time. I would say, in my experience, the vast majority of, I'll just speak for Americans, the vast majority of American pros who turn pro and go to MLS or go to USL, they don't continue working, really. They don't take it seriously. They just do the team training, like you just said. So, of course, there's that. And a couple more points. Even the ones that do continue doing a little bit of work outside of their obligations, because it's now a job that they're a pro, I haven't seen it with basically anybody that the intensity with which they focus and concentrate in their personal training time is not elite. They're saying, oh, I'm going to do a little bit of extra work, you know, in the off season, I'm going to do a little bit of extra work in my day off, and they'll go to the park or they'll go with me or whoever it is. And it's like laughter and enjoyment. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to the gym, 24 hour fitness or whatever it is, there's just guys or girls that just go there kind of and just lounging around, you know, and yeah, they put their kind of like reps in, but they're lounging, and it's not like they don't take it fucking hardcore serious. Every rep matters with all the details, and I'm trying to get better and better and better. So even the guys that have worked outside of the team environment, they don't have that level of intensity. You know, I just spoke to Miguel that you hooked us up with the Grande Sports training. And he mentioned that he had the opportunity of, quote unquote, like training for a session or being in the training for a session with Douglas Costa, ex Bayern Munich, ex, you know, world-class player. And I'm glad he was able to do that, because he was able to see the raw intensity and focus that the guy had with every single repetition. No jokes. So that's the difference, Ben. And the other thing that's very important is, you might have, or you might think you have a great first touch, and this ball popping up doesn't happen to you at the youth level, and you might be a youth national team player. So I'm not talking about some run-of-the-mill mid-tier ECNL or MLS Next kid that's a starter on his team. No, I'm talking the top, right? They might think they have a great first touch and all that stuff, but then they go into the pro environment, and the speed of the pass that they have to receive is escalated, and the speed of the pass in conjunction with being surrounded by pressure is escalated versus youth. So then you start getting exposed and the ball pops up on you because you're not good enough.
Yeah. No, you're not used to it. But Gary, here's the cool thing about having a shit first touch as a youth soccer player is that you can still get better at it. You know, I mean, you're still at the age where you're able to, you know, fix and correct your mistakes. And, you know, for the audience sake, I know somebody's going to ask like, oh, how do I have my son or daughter not have the ball pop up on their first touch? Get your ass on the wall, you know, every single day, thousands of reps, get in rondos, and you're going to see after a period of 2-3 years doing this consistently, you'll have the best first touch on your team. But it's different if you've already made it to high school soccer or college soccer, and then you decide, okay, I'm going to try and fix my first touch. I mean, you're not going to see the same rapid development that you would as a youth player.
Totally. And you're on different development curves, because somebody who has been doing it since they were 10 years old, and now you want to start doing it when you're 14, they have 4 years head start on the number of repetitions and the quality of repetitions on you. So you're going to get better as the 14-year-old just taking this seriously. But if the other guy who started doing it as a 10-year-old continues doing it while you are doing it, they keep getting better as well. So it's almost like you can never catch up. This is something that I call technical debt. I don't know if you and I have recorded a podcast episode on technical debt, but I've written an article on it. Maybe it's something that we'll touch on at some point.
Yeah.
But you're in a deficit. And for you to catch up, you have to be doing – it's hard to catch up, Ben.
Yeah, for sure. No, we've definitely touched on that topic a couple times. And Gary, I mean, we've only talked about, you know, a player's first touch when the ball is rolling to them on the floor. You know, we haven't mentioned – you know, what if somebody is spraying you a 30-yard pass in the air? I mean, that's another layer of your game that one, if you can't control a ball that's on the floor, you know, good luck receiving a 30-yard ping from your teammate mid-height. You know, like it's something that needs to be trained, you know, from an early age. And it's difficult when you're maybe 7, 8, 9 years old, because you're not going to often see at that level, like players pinging the ball across the field. Mm-hmm. So it kind of develops a little bit later on. But yeah, dude, I mean, there's so many different types of first touches that you have to make, either with your chest, your thigh, inside of the foot. I mean, there's so many layers to this, man.
100%, dude. That's why it never ends. And that's why personal trainers will never be unemployed.
1,000%. All right, dude. No, we can go for it.
It's important. Let's move on to point number two, but let me just get this little thing out. The wall is amazing. Everybody should be using the wall religiously. It gets you very high up on the curve, but eventually you do need to have somebody else to be working with, because the wall can only kind of give you a certain type of pass at a certain type of speed. And with you feel me? So you need somebody there to service you.
Yeah. 100%. Personal trainers, dude. That's why they make so much money, bro. Like you said,
we're going to do it, Benny. I'm going to convince you and we're going to launch it. I'll do it all myself. Right, if I have to. There's an amazing opportunity, and I don't think, and forgive me, maybe I'm sure there's people who do exceptional work out there. I just think there's not enough people doing exceptional personal training work.
Yeah. All right, Gary. Number two, allows ball to go across end line when it could have easily been served in for a cross at the last moment.
Infuriating. Fucking infuriating. Okay. Do you know exactly what I'm talking about or no?
I do. I've seen this thousands of times, dude.
Oh my God, I want to strangle the player. So the ball is literally rolling to the end line and you're running after it. And clearly you are going to make it. You're absolutely going to make it. I mean, it's not going to be, you're not going to have a whole yard worth of margin. Like you're not going to get there before the ball is a yard away from the end line, but you're going to make it easy. And they wait so long that the ball ends up going out of bounds by 1 inch, when they could have just struck it when the ball was still completely on the field. And they just wait that one extra microsecond. I don't know why the fuck they do that, but they wait that one extra microsecond, out of bounds, goal kick to the other team. I want to kill you. I want to absolutely kill you. And the context of my rage is different depending on the context of the match at the moment. If you are losing by a goal, say, and time is winding down or something, there's 15 minutes and you just wasted a fucking opportunity to draw the game. If you're drawn with the other team, you just wasted a valuable opportunity for winning. And if you're winning the game, okay, you still fucking gave them the ball and now they have the ball again and they can come down your throat. So every single context is different, but the strangulation desire is there every single time I see it.
Yeah. No, dude, and some people's excuse is like, oh, well, Gary, the defender is right there. I couldn't get a clean service and fucking hit it off and win a corner, dude. Something, you know? You'll see the highest IQ levels. I love seeing that, like the little kids, dude, that are so smart. And it's that same exact scenario. And instead of letting the ball go out, dude, hit it off the defender, win a corner for your team. Make something happen, dude.
But when you see a pro doing this, I you need to be murdered. It's unacceptable. No, but sometimes you see sometimes the pro managers on the sideline, like being lit up with passion, and you can tell that the manager wants to kill his player.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully I can go in and find some of these moments, dude, because I know exactly what you're talking about. I think the audience will, but I think there might be some people out there that are gonna say, "What? Like, Gary, that never happens." But it does.
And it has nothing to do with, oh, players can make mistakes, you know. Like, you see pro managers, and myself included, like, they'll have a clear opportunity on goal and they'll shank it, or they just, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't work out. And you get upset because it's what a crisp, amazing opportunity you missed. But you're like, in your head, you're like, ah, but that happens. Like, I get it. That's okay. You know, it happens to the best of us. But this fucking thing of letting the ball roll out of bounds is completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
It's not a mistake. It's not a mistake. It is stupidity.
Yeah. Or another thing that I see happen too, related to this context, is, you know, there's a defender on them. They beat them. They take a big touch into space, and that big touch ends up rolling out of bounds. Dude. That.
To fucking murder people. Murder. That, okay, that's gonna have to make it on the list, Benny.
Yeah, 100%, dude. 100%. All right, dude. Before you murder somebody, let's move on to the next one.
But
But the
that one that you just gave is a mistake. I mean,
Yeah, for sure.
that one is like, okay, you took a heavy touch, like, fuck, okay, you made a mistake. But
Yeah.
the other one is not a mistake.
What do you think that happens? Just shocking football IQ or?
I think maybe a split second of losing focus. For
Right.
whatever reason, a
Yeah.
split second of, oh, I got this, because they themselves know that they're going to get there. It's obvious. They're like, oh, I got this. Let me, I don't know, compute something else in my head for the 1 microsecond. And it's like, oh, I let it go. And then it's gone.
Oh man. All right, dude.
You don't get mad when you see this happen.
Oh, of course, dude, of course. But I mean, imagine your own players doing it, dude. That's infuriating. Anyways, all right, dude, the list just keeps getting worse and worse. You're gonna have murdered like
Okay.
the entire team by the end of the episode. All right, bro. Has time this one's funny, dude. Has time to serve a cross, and the cross is shockingly poor.
Again, the context matters. When my level of fury depends on the context of the match. So
Yeah.
the worst case scenario is always when you are maybe losing by a goal, or you're making a push to win the game. And because opportunities are tough to come by, Benny. They're tough. The opportunities are tough. And so here's an amazing opportunity. Maybe you're at the corner of the 18. You just received the ball from your central midfielder, or it just popped out to you somehow defensively. And you have nobody's around you. You have no pressure at all. Okay. And you've got numbers in the box. You've got a lot of people in the box. The shit could happen. And then you go to serve it. And you kick it over the goalkeeper, or you kick it out of bounds. You kick it so long, it goes over everybody's head. You lob it into the box so easily for the goalkeeper to just come out and grab it. You know, there's a million different scenarios where the cross is shocking. That is a sign of an amateur. You are an amateur, man.
Yeah.
Amateur hour.
Does that come down to lack of technique, Gary? And just haven't rehearsed it enough in their life, or?
Lack of technique, lack of focus, lack of experience. I mean, everything rolled up into one.
Yeah. I think, Gary, you see this particular moment more in the youth game when it comes to a player having time to serve a cross, and then they blindly cross it in without even looking to who's in the box. You know, it's like, pick up your head, you know, or they'll serve it into the box and there's literally none of their teammates in the box. You even hear parents, you know, like, serve it, cross it, and you're like, to who? There's nobody in the box.
Yeah, that happens
But
all the time, dude. All the time at the youth level. All the time.
Gary, I know there's a player on the US men's national team, a left back that you've criticized a lot in the past. This guy's services are shocking, dude. If the audience, I mean, I think they've gotten somewhat better, but you know, 2 or 3 years ago, and if you don't know, I'm talking about Anthony Robinson. I mean, his services, he would do a good job to, you know, get to the end line, beat a defender, but then when it comes time to his service, it was just completely random. Cross your fingers, close your eyes, do the sign of the cross, and you know, hope for the best, bro.
Yeah. He's gotten better. I think
he has gotten better.
I'm pretty sure his club has worked with him on that because it was so bad, Benny. Four years ago, it was so unbelievably bad. It was literally your description of your youth player serving up a cross because they heard the parents say serve the cross, or they know that they're supposed to like serve the cross no matter what. Well, Anthony Robinson just served the cross. So then whatever happens, happens. But I'm 99% sure that the club has worked with him to improve that part of the game, because all the other tools, not all the other tools, but the athleticism tool in particular really, really is at the top level where he can beat his guy to the end line, right? With raw athleticism and give himself that window of opportunity to serve across. So the club, if I'm the club, it's like, Jesus Christ, we have an asset here. He can always kind of beat his guy and give us some service, but we need to work on his service. So he's gotten a lot better. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
No, for sure. No, the club must have at some point recognized, like, what is this guy doing, bro? And it's, Anthony, the next 2 months, you're working with our service specialist. All you're doing is crossing 10,000 balls, dude. But you're right, Gary. He has gotten better for sure. Especially, I'll just say this, like you said, the context of the situation matters, but dude, late in the game, it's tied, you have a chance to win, and the guy goes to serve it, and it goes 15 yards out of bounds or straight to the goalie. You just, so infuriating, bro.
No, well, you'll see managers like Mourinho back in the day or whatever, that happens, and the broadcast will actually focus in on Mourinho. Mourinho will like turn around from the field and he'll kick the water bottle or something, you know, because it's just unacceptable.
Yeah, no, for sure. This next one, it kills me, bro. Commits a foul when the other team is in trouble and the ball carrier is trapped or is not dangerous in the context. Dude, especially late in the game, you're losing, you're in the opponent's half, you think you have them, and then one of your players commits a stupid foul, dude, like two-hand push from the back or a stupid trip. That one kills me, bro.
It's the worst. I don't know how else to describe it, dude. And I think the audience kind of understands what we're getting at here. And by the way, if you are the coach or you are the supporter of a team who is winning the game and they are pressing you, trying to 90th minute, they want to get the equalizer or something, and you have the ball and they foul you with something stupid, you're the happiest person on earth. Thank God they're so retarded that they just fouled us. We're gonna burn another 4 minutes off the clock now.
Yeah, dude. No, you saw that in the Barca Inter game. I mean, Barca was chasing the game in the last minute, I think, and Barca commits a foul. The entire stadium, Gary, all the fans, even the announcers are like, well, that's gonna be the game. Everybody's cheering. It's frustrating, dude. No, but
even the best of them do it. But that's also because their opponent kind of knows how to draw the contact.
You know what
I'm saying? And dive and get the call, you know, which is a correct call, but they know how to do that. But if I'm sitting here watching USL or MLS, the opponents aren't that good where they're like, oh, I'm going to like draw the contact and get myself the foul right now. No, it's the player who's committing the foul who is stupid as fuck and commits the foul.
Yeah. Well, I think a big part of it too, Gary, is players get mentally frustrated, especially late in the game if you're losing. Like I had a situation where, you know, I'm not going to say the team or name any names, but we were losing 1-0. We're in the opponent's half. Like one of our players has a clear opportunity to go to goal. Like my winger, who's not even involved in the play, just like absolutely decks the defender because of something that the player said to them. And straight red card, we lose the counterattack. 2 minutes later, the game is over, dude. I was, you know, like furious, dude. She comes off like crying. I'm like ripping the player, you know, but I think if they don't have a strong, you know, mental fortitude, then other players can easily get in their heads, dude. And dude, I wish, I don't know if you've seen, Gary, like sometimes they have like NHL, like they mic up the players. These guys are just like massive shit talking to each other, massive shit talking to the ref. But I think in football, dude, you, at the highest levels, these guys are just like getting in their heads. I mean, if you think back to when Zidane did his, you know, his famous headbutt, I'm pretty sure the other guy was telling him like, hey, like I smashed your sister last night or something like that, you know. And obviously Zidane, he lost his cool, you know. So I think that's a big area where this situation happens, where a player loses their head or loses their cool and just commits a stupid foul, bro. Bails the other team out, dude. That's what I like to call it. I mean, I always, in the moments when I see like it's about to happen, I'm telling my team, like, don't bail them out. Don't bail them out. And sure enough, you know, they bail them out, bro.
And look, it's not like we expect our players or everybody to be perfect. Of course not.
Right.
Of course
not.
We're just listing out telltale signs of straight up amateurism. And the more often a particular player commits these things on the list, the more obvious that they are just quote unquote amateur,
right.
Not good enough. That's all.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I'm not calling Zidane an amateur. I mean, this guy's
right.
This guy's the GOAT, bro. I mean, hey, that was the last play of his entire career. So, you know, this fool can do whatever the hell he wants, dude.
Legend.
He's a legend. Legend, bro. All right, dude. Now I'm getting worked up, bro. I'm pissed now.
No, because you think back to the situations and it's just so bad.
Oh, yeah, dude. 100%. All right. Next one. Takes too long on the ball when the correct decision is obvious for the given context.
Yeah, again, most of these things are highlighted when a team is kind of like losing or they want to go for a win because every one of these things harms you so much. So I'll give you a scenario. Maybe you're on the attack, you're losing, or you're going for the win. You're the six, or the six receives a pass from the left side. Clearly, the whole right side for your team is begging for the ball. It's clear as day that if you just switch the point of attack right away, you guys can create an opportunity to score. Something dangerous could possibly happen. And then the six will receive it, and then takes a touch, takes another touch, looks around, and maybe he ends up switching the point of attack, but after 3 seconds, and maybe he doesn't even do it. Maybe he just does some other action. It's just cause for strangulation. It's another situation.
Oh,
these are moments, by the way, these are moments where I think the value of joysticking is important. If we're talking about youth development, clearly I'm illustrating more the pro game and how amateur certain players are. But at the youth level, these are moments where joysticking is a valuable teaching instrument. So if the six is about to receive the ball, be vocal, right? As the coach or the instructor, hey, Dylan, switch the point of attack immediately. One touch switch it, or like right away. And that would be called joysticking. But that is correct. And then you reinforce the behavior. Like, hey, Dylan, awesome. You see, when you did that, we were able to get forward right away. So don't take so long on the ball. Make it as quickly as you possibly can. I don't know, Benny. That just came to my mind because those are at the youth level, man. The kids have to be taught. It's not going to happen on their own.
Yeah. No, and Gary, it doesn't even have to be in the context of your team is chasing the game or it's tied late in the game. I mean, it could be early in the game, 0-0, and your 10 is having the most shocking game of his life, too long for his decisions on the ball. The one that kills me is like the 9 or the winger makes like a perfect run. The 10 waits like 2 or 3 seconds too long, and by the time he plays it, the guy's offsides. Or by the time he plays it, the defender already read his body language, defender steps, and now they're countering your ass to goal, dude. I think you're right. I think it comes down to just having awareness. So, dude, a thing that Brian instilled in me is to, like, if you're the right back and the left back has the ball, you shouldn't be just, you know, ball watching and like daydreaming. Like, start thinking about, okay, if the left back hits it to the center back and then plays it to me, like, I already have 3 options in my head as to where I'm going to go, you know? So you always have to be thinking ahead. And I think it's a massive sign of an amateur if they get the ball and then they pick up their head to try and start making the decision. You know, you see the best players in the world already have their decision made 15 seconds ago, you know?
You nailed it. I don't want to say anything else. That's exactly correct. Awareness. Yeah. It exploits your lack of awareness, period.
Yeah. This one is kind of along the same lines, but the next one, you say the absolute obvious correct decision is to switch the point of possession to get out of pressure, but the pass is made to keep the ball in the pressure area.
Infuriating. Like you're in a high pressure situation. There's like seven bodies in a compact area. Maybe there's three of you and four of them in a particular sector of the field, and you receive a pass, and clearly it's a wide open opportunity for your next pass to get the hell out of pressure. So clearly maybe your center back is wide open. You can just get it to him, or clearly, you know, you can switch the point of attack all completely. And one touch, you could just get it to the other side of the field to your guy. And no, instead of doing that, no, I'm just going to pass it right back into the pressure. I maybe you completed a pass to your buddy, but you stayed in the pressure area. Stupid. And again, you nailed it last time. It's lack of awareness. It's lack of awareness, because maybe you have to focus so much because there's so much pressure around you. You have to focus so much in your local environment that you never pick your head up or scan really briefly and see, oh shit, if I were to get it, it's a one touch out of here and we're safe and we can go harm them or something. They don't see it. They're so stuck in their bubble.
Yeah. The other one too, Gary, is instead of going forward when there's a clear, obvious, you know, chance to hit it to the 10 or hit it to your winger, they just reset it to the center back. Jacob Barone, dude.
Yeah, murder. Or just, you don't even have to, it doesn't even have to be a pass. Just advance the ball yourself. Dribble forward.
Yeah,
go.
Yeah.
Attack the space with your dribble. And they won't do that. They'll just say, oh, I'm going to complete another pass over here.
Yeah.
That's the trouble at times with youth players. Again, we're talking about pros and identifying amateurism at the pro level. But with youth players, for coaches who are doing the quote-unquote right thing and they're teaching them a possession-based methodology and they're learning how to keep the ball, sometimes lost in the mix is those moments where it's like, well, no, buddy. Like, yes, we want to keep the ball, but if you see you have 20 yards of space in front of you, go attack it.
Yeah.
Go attack it. I mean, if you're maybe up 2-1 or something like this and it's a tight game, maybe you don't, because you don't want to lose the ball. You don't want to piss the ball away to the other team. So maybe you do keep it and you don't attack the space. But it's a missed opportunity sometimes for coaches in general.
No, dude, that was me as a player. And I've brought this experience up on the podcast before, but I can remember one game. I was at the sixth. You know, we just got scored on. It's 1-0. There's 10 minutes left in the game. The nine does a kickoff to me, and I reset it straight back to the center back. And I just hear, like, Brian, like, the same way that you want to fucking strangle the guys, like, Brian was infuriated. He's like, fucking, Benny, go forward, bro. Like, we're losing, dude, you know? And ever since that moment, I'm like, you know, the context matters, dude. You have to read the game. You have to know what it is that your team needs in that situation, bro. But yeah, dude, ever since then, I mean, it was ingrained in my brain.
Yeah, good, man. We should emphasize too here that as youth coaches, we're using these words like, I want to strangle you. I want to murder this fool. Like let's set this guy on fire, all that sort of stuff. But that's all internal, you know, an internal emotional state. But at the youth level, the players are not really receiving that, you know, they're receiving good. I mean, I'm not necessarily going to say calm, like, oh, Benny, it's okay. Just go forward next time.
Yeah,
you know, it's not like that, you know, but it's also not, Benny, I want to kill you. Go forward, sort of communication from the coach. It's just at the right level, and everybody has to figure out what that right level is for themselves.
Yeah, no, dude, people, like we talked about at the beginning of the episode, the audiogram that we posted about you being, you know, pissed off at the build-out line. And like, dude, some of the comments are like, they're like, geez, like, lower your competitive edge, like their kids, or like, who would want this guy, you know, coaching their kids? I'm like, dude, come on. So when they hear you say like, oh, I want to kill this fool, they're gonna be like, yeah.
Well, our society has just gotten so soft, Benny.
Sure.
Let's not go down that broader national cultural malaise that we've been immersed in for years now, but it's gotten so unbelievably soft. You can't say, things are getting better now, thank God, but you couldn't say anything. You can't say nothing. You can't express yourself the way that you want to express yourself. Yeah, we got to nerf everything. We got to cushion all the corners of the furniture. We got to no, fuck you and get out, unsubscribe.
All right, dude, we went through all six of yours, but I added three more of my own, dude. I think
okay, go for it.
You'll agree with them. Overhits or underhits simple passes, making it difficult for their teammates to control the ball. I think, dude, I think like you even see that at the pro level. I mean, your teammate's 5 yards away from you. And I think when I was a kid, the phrase was like a hospital ball, where you give them a ball that's like slowly rolling. And then by the time it gets to them, the defender's already coming in too. Yep. There it is. You know exactly what I'm talking about, dude. But by the time the ball gets to you, the other defender's basically putting you in the hospital, dude, ending your life. You know, that's an infuriating one. Or they overhit it. And the other thing too is they'll make a pass to a teammate, and maybe they do connect the pass, but it was basically for nothing because there's already somebody, a defender on them, or basically the purpose of the pass doesn't exist, bro. You know, it's like, what was the point of that? You know, I'm not talking about like the bounce pass, but like a six playing a ball to his winger when there's already two or three guys in that area and nowhere to go, you know, switch it and go the other way. But yeah, dude, the quality of the passes, you can easily tell who's an amateur like that.
Yeah. Two variations on it that came to mind. One is, I'll just piggyback on your six playing a ball to the winger, is, or the six out to the side to anybody, is if you want to get on the attack, the six does a roly-poly pass out there, and it's just so slow, the whole other team has shifted, so the whole opportunity is gone, right? Versus really firing a cannon out there and then having that extra second to enable your team to attack. So that's infuriating. And along the similar lines, when the six is switching the point and trying to generate an opportunity, they pass it behind the player, you know, instead of leading the player and having his teammate kind of run onto the ball and launch the attack. No, they even give it to his foot or pass it a little bit behind them. So you just kill the whole sequence.
Yeah. The next one I put, Gary, I'm surprised you didn't put it on yours. Panics under light pressure and clears the ball aimlessly instead of maintaining possession.
Mm.
I think you see that more in the youth game with the parents and coaches saying, launch it out. But dude, even MLS, do you see a play that it could easily have been like a 3v1, even if your own half, like in your corner, easily could have been a 3v1, just touch out of it, but they'll just launch it out, bro. I mean,
yeah.
Maintain possession. Yeah.
It all those things expose you. It should be on the list, right? Expose you as quote unquote an amateur, but usually they don't infuriate me like the other ones. You feel me? Like,
yeah.
The ones that infuriated me or infuriate me made the list. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of things we can put on the list. It's just the ones that really get my blood boiling.
Okay, I think this last one might infuriate you, bro. Mm. Attempts overly ambitious shots from unrealistic distances or angles when better options are available. That one kills me, bro.
That one raises the temperature a bit. I don't throw the laptop at the screen, you know, or levels, but it raises my temperature for sure. So for instance, if maybe you've pinned the other team back, you're trying to go for the draw or the win, and your center back has the ball, you know, at 30 yards out, and he shoots the ball. I'm like, what is going on here? I mean, once in a blue moon, like you have a Vincent Kompany when he played for Man City, kind of do that. But I mean, that's a one in a million thing. So for the love of God, and on top of it, you know that your center back blows chunk. He's terrible, you know, and he's shooting the ball like, no, dude, no. Oh, there's a little anecdote. Maybe we can put it in the episode where Diego Simeone, currently the Atletico Madrid boss, Argentina national team legend, he was giving an anecdote of when he was playing with Maradona, and Simeone just advanced the ball and took a shot like 30 yards out, And Maradona just took him aside. He's like, hey, Cholo, like, how many goals have you scored from there, you know, in your career? And he's like, oh, none. And he's like, well, why the fuck are you shooting from there?
Yeah, dude, it's funny. No, even the one you brought up about Vincent Kompany, when that fool scored, I think there was interviews after the game of his teammates, and they were all like yelling to him, like, Vinny, Vinny, don't shoot it, don't shoot it. That's well, it's a banger. Didn't that game secure the Premier League or something like that? I think it was a massive goal. It was a massive
goal.
The thing that kills me at the youth level is, especially when they're like 8 years old, bro, and you've never seen them kick a ball in the air more than like 20 to 30 yards. And all of a sudden in the game, they attempt a shot from 30 yards out. You're like, what are you doing? You've never in your life have hit it that far, and you're trying to shoot from there. Oh, what are we doing, bro?
Yeah. Well, Benny, like, you're too harsh. Let them play. Let them figure it out.
They're like, coach, I thought I had that one.
It was so beautiful. I was going to.
Dude.
I saw the keeper out.
Fucking hilarious, man. I have a feeling people in the audience will add to their list with their own signs of amateurism. But I think I mentioned this to you, I think it would be good to make a list like this for coaches as well. Mm. And even when we were talking, amateur parents, bro, what a list that would be.
That would be a tremendous list too. And amateur coaches.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I meant before. Yeah, a list of amateur coaches. Like,
Okay. I thought you meant expanding this particular list that we have now for the benefit of coaches to use.
No. Fuck that, dude. No, yeah. That's it. Let's expose coaches, bro.
All right, dude. Well, but in the process of doing that, we're helping one community and hurting the same community. We're helping one community, say the parents or whoever, identify coaches who probably aren't up to snuff. And but we're also potentially harming them, because coaches who listen, they'll be like, oh, I got to hide that. I got to stop doing that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they'll hide in the weeds.
Yeah. No, and Gary, I mean, me personally, I don't consider myself like a fucking professional coach or at the level of Pep Guardiola or fucking Ancelotti, but I recognize the areas of weakness that I still have. And, you know, I try and learn every single day to not only help me, but to help my players as best as I can. You know, I'm not sitting here saying, dude, maybe there are some things that I do that are still amateur, you know, and I'll add those to the list myself. But I think if you're not trying to educate yourself, that's a massive red flag of an amateur coach right there.
For sure. For sure. All right. And
anybody,
Benny, what else?
Anybody listening to this, you know, they're on the right track, dude.
What else you got?
Well, dude, I know you love this question. How does promotion relegation tie into this one? You can't be amateur if there's fucking promotion relegation, dude, simply put.
Well, let's be clear and keep repeating the same thing. One of the things that they say in politics is repetition is king. You have to repeat the same thing over and over and over and over and over again for it to actually eventually sink in. Okay. So here we go. What promotion relegation is, it's an open market, an open ecosystem. Forget about soccer. Okay. It's basically an open, laissez-faire sort of market ecosystem. And in that sort of situation, the cream, I don't want to say truly rises to the top, but the probability that the true cream truly rises to the top is way higher than in a system that is closed, monopolized, and gatekeeper driven. Because then it's just a few humans or a handful of humans or just one corporation or two corporations picking and choosing based on their own judgment and based on their own incentives and based on their own agendas. As to who they elevate and who they do not elevate. But in an open ecosystem, that doesn't really exist anymore. It is a full-on open competition of ideas with different humans having different ideas, different judgments, different opinions. And then the marketplace, the competition, sorts out who made the good decisions, who made the bad decisions, meaning who picked the right players and who picked the amateur players. And so over the course of time, these amateur players who clearly do these things that we listed out today, they fade out. They die out. They don't make it. The system filters them out. And of the few who do end up making it, because one way or another, you know, they squeaked by, eventually they're eliminated. And the only ones who survive are the better ones, the ones who don't make these amateur soccer deficient moves on a regular basis. That's it, man. Yeah. A pure meritocracy.
So you think right now with the current system that we have in the U.S., like a lot of these amateur players are scraping by and still surviving? Because at the end of the day, I mean, there's sure the clubs are going to want the best players, but there's no accountability. I mean, I know we bring it up a lot, but you look at the Galaxy going from winning the league last year to now the worst team in the league. But it's all good. You know, it's nobody's going to. I mean, obviously, you see like the fans are saying like, oh, get Greg Vanney out now. And, you know, let's sell these players. But I mean, at the end of the day, all these players that are on the Galaxy now, I'm sure they're still going to have a team to play on next year. No, it's not like their career is going to be over.
Yeah. 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 I mean, first off, who picks these players? And right. The whole thing's broken, Benny. The best players don't rise to the top here in the States. They just don't. And for those in the audience, I know a huge proportion of our audience are involved at the youth level. Look at what they've done with the youth leagues. Yeah, it's the youth leagues that run everything, and they pick and choose what clubs get to participate in the league and what clubs don't. So you could have, I know personally, a whole bunch of coaches and clubs that are really good at what they do. They're very good, and they're just not accepted into these leagues because of X, Y, or Z reason, unjustifiably so. And then that is an example of the cream not rising to the top. So these coaches in these particular clubs aren't coaching an MLS Next or aren't coaching an ECNL. So they don't have the opportunity to pick and choose the player profiles that they want to participate in those higher tiers of the youth system. And some other jackasses who are terrible, but because they have the right affiliation or the right badge, they're picking and choosing certain players to elevate, which suck, frankly. So again, it's broken, Benny. The whole thing's broken.
Yeah, maybe next week, Gary, we can touch on, I know you sent me, I think it was an email that somebody had sent you, but they were kind of asking, like, why not just start your own league, you know, and if you're as good as MLS, then one day, you know, you can compete and be at that higher level. But I know you answered with a lot of good stuff, but I know you can touch on that topic forever. So,
yeah, 100%. I'll leave this episode with this one thought along those lines, because I don't want people leaving it saying, oh yeah, well, why don't you just start your own league or somebody, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like saying, well, if you think the U.S. men's national team sucks, start your own U.S. men's national team. And if you're better than them, then there you go. It's just as ignorant of a statement, because clearly you can't start your own U.S. men's national team. You have to be sanctioned, right? The federation runs that show. I can go out and pick who I think are the best players that are better than the current U.S. men's national team, but I'm not going to be allowed to compete in the necessary competitions or circuits or have the licenses or anything, because I'm not sanctioned. So you can't actually go out and prove that you know better.
Yeah. I like it, brother. Amateur Hour, the title of this episode.
Oh, that's good. I like it.
All right, dude. Good stuff, man.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers, everyone, and keep building.